Hello, hello.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I don't know why, but it feels like it's been forever since we last talked.
It really does.
I don't know why. Maybe
Yeah.
it's like school
Yeah, could
starting.
be.
Maybe it's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that might be it. Everything just moves by so much faster and slower at the same time
Yeah.
when school is happening. But anyway, I'm excited to bring you this story that I hated while I was researching. So I figured, I could redo it or I could just share it with you anyway. And I went with the latter. So yeah, without further ado, let's get right into it. I'm Sonia.
I'm Maddie.
And welcome to Grimm. So, have you heard of, I think it's pronounced Joachim. It's a German name. It's Joachim.
Are you asking if is this the case that it's called?
Yeah, I don't know how to pronounce it. I feel really,
I
really bad.
do not know how to pronounce it, but I don't know. It sounds kind of familiar, but I don't know if I
Joachim
can commit to
Kroll?
saying I do know. That sounds less familiar.
Maybe not. So his full name is Joachim George Kroll. And again, I think I'm saying that so incredibly wrong, and I'm so sorry. But he was born on April 17th, 1933, and he has a long list of really terrible and honestly really terrifying crimes. He was not a good person.
Is
That much
this
is certain.
in Germany or
In
in?
Germany. Yeah. And so, to give you a brief overview of those crimes, he was a German serial killer, child molester, necrophile, and cannibal.
Good.
I think that every single thing that I said on that list got progressively worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he had a total of eight other siblings, so like nine children in his family. And immediately the sources are hazy, which I find very frustrating. But one of the sources said that he was the sixth child out of nine, and the other said that he was the youngest. So I'm not actually sure where he was in that list of children. But what I do know is that he was constantly like degraded by his family. He was teased a lot. He was called weak. He was made fun of, etc., etc. And this is a bit of a sidebar, a bit of a tangent that I think I'm going to go on, because I think we've talked about it before, but I just want to bring it up again, to set the scene for the rest of this episode. I do want to mention that he did actually have two of the McDonald Triad. And so I know that you know about the triad because I feel like it's one of the things that's like very common. But just to give like a little overview of the triad, it's known as the triad, like the sociopath triad or the homicidal triad. And it's basically the set of three factors where if someone has any two of them, they're considered as like not a certainty, but more or less a predictor that this person might have violent tendencies or may commit serial offenses. And so the triad was proposed in 1963. So this is about 30 years after he was born. So of course, he wouldn't have been diagnosed with this, but looking back on it, I think we can kind of tell in terms of symptoms where he was at. Now the triad, it's the whole basis of it is it links cruelty to animals, obsession with fire or fire setting, and persistent bedwetting past the age of five to these violent or homicidal behaviors slash like sexually predatory behaviors. And honestly, the triad is like a point of contention, I think, because there are some studies that haven't found any statistical links between having elements of the triad and violent offenders, and kind of suggest that instead of maybe this triad of behaviors, it's actually more linked to childhood trauma or parental neglect or abuse. But when I hear that, I think kind of like, yes, it might have a link to childhood trauma, but then like, wouldn't it make sense that that childhood trauma and abuse would be linked to violent tendencies in the first place?
Yeah.
So I feel like no matter what direction it goes in, I feel like they're all linked. But either way, Kroll was a bedwetter who was known to sexually abuse animals, so take that as you will.
Not well.
Yeah.
Taking it well.
Not well at all. And I think that, honestly, the bedwetting also probably caused more embarrassment and humiliation, and that probably fed into the violent tendencies later on, so it's just kind of this, like, vicious cycle that he couldn't break. His family was from Hindenburg in the city located in southern Poland. And then they moved to North Rhine-Westphalia, or NRW, which is a state in western Germany. And I'm so sorry if I'm butchering those names as well. I am American, and I feel like that says a lot. Anyway, they ended up moving after the end of World War II, and I'm not sure if it's directly related or not, but his father was a prisoner of war during World War II, and who most likely died during that period, so I think they ended up moving after his death. I'm pretty sure that the two reasons are linked. And like most families in Germany during the war, his family was very, very poor, so not well off at all. Anyway, the World War II ended in 1945, and he ended up quitting school in 1948, and he did repeat many, many grades, so he was around 15 years old with about a fourth grade education at this point in 1948. And it was actually revealed later on, I think, after all of this had happened, that he had an IQ of 78. Some sources say he didn't know how to read, so... Oh, wow. The education level was very low, and I guess it does make sense being in a family of 9 kids during a war.
Yeah.
But for reference, IQ tests usually have an average score of around 100, and then the test is revised every few years to, like, maintain the 100 as the average. But most people, like 68% of people, have an IQ between 85 and 115, and a very small fraction of people have a low IQ of, like, below 70 or a high IQ of above 130. So, he is on the lower side. But to be honest, like, looking at his behavior and everything, which I'll get into, he was very methodical. He was very self-aware. So, this kind of does point to probably having an IQ of over 78. So, not exactly sure how the test worked back then or what their basis was for it. Anyway, after he quit school when he was 15 years old, he worked as a farmhand, and I think this is kind of where a lot of his problems started, because he was his tasks were to help kill the animals. And he said that this kind of inspired these fantasies he had of murder. Yeah. And it also, quote unquote, awakened his sex drive. So not good. None of that is good. No. He also said that he attempted to have a romantic relationship with a woman at this point, but he felt, quote, awkward and inadequate with women sexually, end quote. And he said that his first and only encounter with a woman was a failure. So in his mind, I feel like he started thinking that he should have those types of encounters with someone who, like, couldn't complain about how he was doing. So all of this kind of were brought together to the rest of his life, kind of influencing the rest of his life. But he didn't really do anything to people until his mother died shortly after he had moved away, and that's kind of when he started killing, so in 1955.
Okay.
And then he ended up moving to another city in NRW, and in 1960, he found a job as a toilet attendant for a company, a German industrial conglomerate called Mannesmann. And then sometime later, he started working for Thyssen Industries, and then he moved to another district. I believe he stopped killing when he started working for the first company, and then started up again a few years later when he moved to the second company.
Okay.
And honestly, he was, for lack of a better word, deranged. And somehow he evaded the law. He, like, did not get caught for a surprisingly long time based on what he was doing. Oh. He was very particular about where he was killing, so he only killed in the same place once or twice, and also he killed a few years apart, like, in that same place. So, and this is, like, the mid-1900s, so it was difficult to, like, have proper forensic evidence, which could have played into it. And the other thing that I think really helped him evade capture was that there were other killers in the area at the time. So I think the sheer number of victims kind of threw off everything.
Mm-hmm.
His specific MO was that he would surprise his victims and strangle them quickly. And then he would strip the body, have intercourse with it, masturbate over it later. He would then mutilate and cut off pieces to be eaten later. And then when he returned home, he would have intercourse with this rubber sex doll that he had. So none of this is good.
Yeah.
Like, it's just disturbing.
Yeah.
It's incredibly disturbing. And this is where I think that he did probably have a higher IQ than he was letting on, because he changed his MO every so often. Sometimes. Yeah.
Like, and it's also interesting to me that you said, like, he would wait years, like, because usually when you have, I don't know, it's interesting that you can just, like, restrain that urge to, like, kill. It kind of does point to some kind of intelligence, in my opinion. Like,
I think it was that he would, like, switch up his location, so if he killed in one place, he wouldn't pick the same place for a few years. So I don't think he was really restraining anything, but I think what he was doing was that he was still being really methodical about it. He was, like, leaving space between, like, kills in that one specific region.
Yeah, that's true.
So it does point to some sort of intelligence. Mm-hmm. So, like, sometimes he wouldn't cut off pieces to eat later. Once he killed a man, you know, it was mixed up, usually. And, again, I think that that's what really helped him evade law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
If he was doing this in this day and age, he would get not very far at all, because for forensic evidence, I think you can't really cover that up.
True.
When you're leaving a body like this. But unfortunately, the way that they would collect forensic evidence and the technologies that they had available to them, it just wasn't conducive to catching a killer.
Mm-hmm.
Later on, he did say that after this, his first killing, his kind of urges subsided for about 4 years, but authorities do believe that in that time he was responsible for more murders, so I think he might have confessed to one later on, but again, that, like, lie, almost, where he said, like, you know, I only did this one, and then 4 years later I had the urge again.
Mm-hmm.
If that is a lie, again, that points to some sort of higher intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And that is horrifying.
Yeah, true.
Like, that's scary, because I really, obviously, not, like, none of it is good, but I think there's just such a difference between someone, like, acting on urges versus someone who's, like, planning these murders. Both are horrifying, but the second one is, like, you're a target.
Yeah.
And it's just really bad. At this point in my research, I found a list of victims and exactly what he did to each one of them. But honestly, I was very disturbed by it. Like, it's not good. It's not, like, I know we've talked about, like, a list of victims sometimes on podcast, but this one just, it's not good.
Mm-hmm.
But I will link it in the description if you would like to read more. I honestly would not recommend it, but it's there.
Okay.
So one thing I do want to say about this list is that he killed one of his victims on June 16th, 1959, and a mechanic named Heinrich Ott was arrested for the crime. We know now that he didn't do it, but he was imprisoned for this crime, for the supposed murder of this young woman. and he ended up hanging himself in jail.
Oh my God, that's really sad.
Yeah, it is really, really sad that he was wrongfully convicted of this. And he's not the only one. He was one of six other men who were arrested for crimes that Kroll actually committed. And again, I feel like that's like some sort of, like, how was he framing these men for these crimes?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there must have been something.
Mm-hmm.
But really, really heartbreaking that he wasn't caught, but six more people paid the price for what he was doing.
Yeah.
So what I mentioned earlier about him being self-aware in terms of changing his MO, I did mention that he ended up murdering one man, and that was Hermann Schmitz. So their names are very similar, and I just can't read is the issue here.
Fair.
But anyway, this murder happened in 1965, and this was kind of wild because the MO is so drastically different. In this case, he travels to a different town where he saw Schmitz and his fiancée having sex in the front seat of a car in this like secluded area, as you see in the movies. And so he lured Schmitz out of the car by like calling for help. And then when Schmitz's guard was down, he stabbed him. So again, like a very different MO,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to the strangling. And he said later on that he was planning on attacking Schmitz's fiancée next, but she got in the driver's seat of the car and drove the car at Kroll, who ended up just giving up and running away. Yes, she was very smart in the face of that. Like, that's horrifying. A horrifying situation to be in, and yeah. I am glad that she got away, at yeah. least. But unfortunately, even with her account, it is the mid-1900s, so she did her best describing him, but it didn't turn up any leads. There's also a town away, and it didn't fit his MO, so he really switched it up there to mm-hmm. evade capture. Now, you might be wondering, how did he get caught? And this story gets wilder, if you can believe it. So, he was arrested on July 3rd, 1976. And he was arrested for kidnapping and killing a 4-year-old girl named Marion Ketter. And the way that this happened was that the police were actually going door to door to try and find her when one of his neighbors approached the policeman and told him that there was this waste pipe in his apartment building that was blocked up. And you might be thinking, why would you tell a policeman about that?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, he told the police that when he asked his neighbor, Kroll, whether he knew it was blocking the pipe, Kroll had just replied, "Guts."
Okay.
Yeah. So.
So why?
That was incredibly sketchy of him.
Yeah.
I think, and his neighbor was right to be concerned.
Yeah.
And so the police went up to his apartment, and they found the body of Marion Ketter. And he had cut her up. Some parts were in the refrigerator. Some parts were in a pan of boiling water.
Oh God.
And her insides were stuck in the waste pipe. So he was immediately arrested, but I had the exact same reaction that you had.
What was the point of him like changing up his MO and like changing up location if he's just gonna like not even try and lie? Like, I'm glad he didn't, but yeah. Like,
no, I thought the same exact thing. It doesn't
make sense.
It really doesn't. And like that's the way he gets caught as well. His guts in the waste pipe.
Dang.
Obviously, he deserved to be caught for these crimes. These are horrific. Yeah. These are not bad. I have actually no words to describe how disgusted I am with this man.
Yeah.
So he ended up admitting to killing Marion Ketter, and then he gave details of 13 other murders and one attempted murder over the previous 2 decades. So it was a confession of a total of 14. And I think that the authorities thought that there were even more. And this is where things get, I don't want to say wild, but like his reasons were insane. So what we know of other cannibalistic serial killers is that they typically see flesh as like a trophy, or they're sexually motivated by it. But Kroll said that he took the flesh from his victims to cook and eat, because he wanted to save on his grocery bill because meat was too expensive.
Oh my god. What?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Exactly. So he was very practically motivated because instead of buying meat from the grocery store, he could just hunt people.
Hunted animals? Like, I also literally like hunting animals, but like
better that
than hunting like people.
A person, a human.
Yeah.
Like, I don't condone any of that. But again, no. Like, it's like these are women who he mutilated and then ate. Like, that's horrific.
Yeah.
It's literally, it's disgusting. Like, I'm actively disgusted.
Life is not worth the price of, like, your groceries.
Yeah, exactly. So I think when he was caught and put into custody and he confessed to all these murders, he basically said that he thought that he was going to get this, like, operation to cure him of these homicidal urges, and then he would be released from prison.
No.
Exactly. He murdered people.
Yeah.
And he mutilated people. And he was charged with 8 murders, 1 attempted murder. And then in April of 1982, after a 151-day trial, he was convicted on all counts and was given a life sentence. And he deserved it. He absolutely deserved it. On April 8th, he was convicted, and I firmly believe that he should be convicted. Like, yeah. It doesn't matter if you think that you're ill.
Yeah.
He still murdered people.
Yeah.
He ended up dying of a heart attack in 1991 in prison. And that is the ending of this story. And honestly, I think that, you know, we talk about killers like Ted Bundy or Jeffrey Dahmer a lot. But this one was just honestly so much more disturbing to research.
Yeah.
And I'm glad it's over. And I will never be revisiting this again.
Fair enough.
Because no. Yeah. It was just bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on that happy note, that's all I have for you today. Do you have any questions, comments, or concerns? And I'm not going to ask you if you liked it, because I think you would be lying if you said that you did.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't got any words for that.
Yeah. No, I don't blame you. I also don't have any words for it.
Yeah. Just, wow, I guess.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, honestly, I think the only thing that we can say about it is that, like, at least he was caught, and at least he confessed to the murders, and at least that'll give the family some sort of peace.
Yeah.
And I think in a case like this, like, that's the only thing you can hope for.
That's true.
Yeah. And on that very happy note, how would you feel about changing the subject? Because I could use a change.
Yeah.
Fair.
Still at a loss for words.
Yep.
I guess I got through a week of school.
You did?
I did. My hopefully last ever semester of school.
Ooh.
And I don't know, I survived. So I'm grateful for that.
I am also grateful that you survived.
Yeah. I'm hoping the rest of the semester I survive as well, but yeah. You know.
I hope so too. Know. For your sake. For your sake, I do too.
Yeah.
And for mine. I don't know what I would do without you.
Well, it's fine. We'll just hope I hang in there.
Make it through. We'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll be okay.
Yeah. But yeah, just hanging in there with school. What about you?
Pretty solid. I'm in the exact same boat. I was working on my dissertation over the weekend, so I feel like I didn't even get a weekend, and I just need a day off.
That's really the worst.
Yeah. But hanging in there is a good one. I'm hoping to get some actual sleep tonight.
Hoping that for you as well.
Thank you. I will take all the prayers you have.
All right. Send them your way.
But yeah, that's all from me, I guess, for this week. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add?
I do not.
All right. Do you want to spiel us out?
Yeah. So you can find us on Instagram at Grimm Podcast. You can follow us, like our photos, you can DM us. What did I just...
You can like our photos and DM us.
And from our profile, there's a button to email us. You can email us at thegrimpodcast@gmail.com. You can send us thoughts on stories we have covered, stories you want us to cover, or life updates of your own. We also have a Twitter, which is Podcast Grim, and a Facebook, which is Grim Podcast. And other than that, just leave us a good review and tell your friends and family about us.
Yeah, and I do promise that for next week, I'll pick a chill little paranormal story, and all will be right again in the world.
Nice.
But until then, stay safe out there, you guys.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.